This is the local music revolution. Hello and welcome to the Local Music Revolution. I am your host, Ogre. On today's episode, we have a thrash metal band out of San Luis Obispo County area called Militant Civilian. I got into contact with Militant Civilian thanks to a suggestion by a previous artist on the show named Cool Homer Jack. You can go check him out. Link is in the description of this show. There's not many crazy things to say about the show because it actually went off without a hitch thanks to Randy. Really good guy, really easy to talk to, really enthusiastic about being interviewed and being on the show. So it was fairly simple to actually get him on the show. There were a couple hiccups, but hey, life happens. We were able to do it, and that is what's great about this is we got to talk to him. Militant Civilian is old thrash metal, at least how I hear it. It's really, really good, heavy, hard-hitting metal. And then the singer on the tracks has this really high singing voice. It's crazy. And that's where we come from. I feel a kindred spirit in Randy because of actually hearing what he has music-wise, and what Militant Civilian is something that I've played before that I really want to play again, so it's very nice to have him on the show. It's always fun finding new metalheads to talk to because their vision of what the genre is isn't always quite like yours, and they are all really awesome in one way or another because of being metalheads. You probably don't understand that if you're not a metalhead yourself, but it is great when you find another brother or sister out there that likes one of your favorite bands just as much as you do. With that being said, if you like the bands or artists that I have on the show, or you have suggestions, please get in contact with me. I always want to hear your responses to episodes or to things I post because it is important to have a dialogue between host and listener, so you can contact me at facebook.com/localmusicrevolution, on Twitter at @TLMRpodcast, and on Instagram at @TheLocalMusicRevolution. You can also find The Local Music Revolution on WordPress, thelocalmusicrevolution.wordpress.com. There you can follow the blog, you can comment, you can rate, all of those things. If you are looking for the podcast on these different formats, the main formats that I promote are iTunes, Stitcher, and YouTube. You can go onto all three of those, search The Local Music Revolution, you will find the episodes. As of right now, I'm a few behind on YouTube because it takes forever to get those things done, updated, and uploaded. So please bear with me, I'll always be behind on YouTube. Quick shout out to the sponsor, Stringjoy.com, everybody. Stringjoy goes through, asks you questions about your playing styles, and they will help you find a custom set of strings that fits your style, fits your needs, fits your tone, fits your imagination. All you have to do is go to stringjoy.com. You can initiate the process there. They also have tension-based strings that you can just grab and test out the strings. They also have custom instrument cables, which is awesome. You can actually customize the length. You can also customize the connectors. There is the straight as most, and then the 90 degree angle connector. And they also have four different kinds of guitar picks that you can grab, check out, and see what works. All you have to do is go to stringjoy.com, go through, get the things you need, test them out, let them know that you heard about them here at the Local Music Revolution. When you're done, you're at checkout, all you have to do is enter the promo code LOCAL, That's L-O-C-A-L. And you will get a discount for being an amazing listener of the Local Music Revolution. Thank you for your patience, everybody. You have been awesome. Now, without any further ado, this is Randy talking about the amazing thrash metal he creates with Militant Civilian. All right, I'm here with Randy from Militant Civilian. How are you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. How you doing?
I am doing well. I'm doing well. So, there's not much in the way of a bio for you guys, so can you tell me how you got the band together, and has there been lineup changes?
Actually, on both those questions. So pretty much my musical experience goes back all the way to about 2006 when I first started playing. We played under a different alias. We had formed roughly right around 2008, 2009. We were a different alias back then, a lot different music. The writing was different, it's evolved a lot, and we had to, make a cut. And so pretty much right now, our lineup now is our permanent lineup. We had one guitar player that, we've replaced over the years, but we started out in 2009, started, hitting everything hard, went down to L.A., played some pretty nice shows, and we ended up going down under for about a year trying to reconstruct everything. Wow. So it's definitely been a labor of love. And that's why there's not much of a bio, because there's a small break in between when we came out. So like out of nowhere, we just recently came out in the past couple months with an album for sale, merchandise, actual radio interviews, and it's all like it's completely night and day different.
All right, so what about the name? The name Militant Civilian, does it mean something specific to you, or is there a reason behind why you chose it?
Actually, yeah. So when we had a different alias, we had gotten rid of an old bass player. At that time, we realized that, kind of a funny story. All right, this is going to be our Spinal Tap moment of the whole interview.
Awesome.
Okay. The original name we had for our name was called WILO. We made an acronym called While You Live Oblivious. And the bass player we had cut, he originally came with the idea saying, it meant round eye or something in Japanese. And, it was kind of a cool historical context. Well, that's WILO, not WILO. So we start looking it up, and we literally named ourselves after, a Japanese tree or something ridiculous like that. So then we came with the acronym While You Live Oblivious. Our singer, Jeremy Heller, pretty much was the biggest entrepreneur on that. And that was like the big Spinal Tap moment of the beginning lifespan of this band.
That is awesome, man. Named after a Japanese tree.
Yep.
All right, so you said that you guys are you came out with the CD and it's a night and day as you guys were. What's the name of the CD and when did it come out?
So the CD is called The Undertaking, and it's officially produced in probably March of 2015 was our actual official release date. We haven't done the huge release party for the local area just because we've actually been doing more localized events trying to get the footwork up to that point. But it was definitely a labor of love, and we actually did that in my music studio. So put a lot of time in that album. That was the biggest thing, because previous experiences, you can play a million shows, and if you don't have anything that represents you, it's not going to take you anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So you say that you recorded it in your recording studio. Now, it took a long time to record, but sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Okay.
All right. So, damn it. All right. So, are the songs all freshly written, or are they from the past incarnation of Militant Civilian?
They're all original written. In the original project, part of the reason we had a separation with a former member was, there were some, band criteria issues, and anytime you get in a creative environment, you're going to run across that. Yeah. So I had all these riffs that you're hearing now, I was slowly developing them, and I would bring them to the table, and it was always, nope, we're not going to use that. Nope, you know, and like, okay, you know, maybe one day we'll use it, and one day is now. So it was all original writing that I literally had been doing just in my own little, you know, dungeon at home pretty much.
So here's the question that I was fumbling on. Is you built a home studio in your basement, and how long did it actually take you guys to record, sit down, and just get everything together?
So it would have taken probably about 3.5 months. What we did is, you know, it's all double walled in there. I have sound padding up, and I pretty much acoustic proofed it because, you know, I don't want my neighbors, you know, getting pissed off at me. So that's the first part of being a musician, that struggle.
Yeah.
And so we were hitting it pretty hard. I have a friend who went through Cuesta College, and he did part of their recording program, the Studio Tech, and I met him just through playing shows. And what we do is we contracted him to actually be the recording tech.
Nice.
And we did everything in layers. We live recorded our drummer, and then we tracked everything identical off of his drum tracks. And so it was definitely, you know, there are a lot of re-records, and we spent a lot of long days. But we would have had it done in 3.5 months. But our recording tech, his hard drive died, like, right at about 2.5 months, like, when we were in the completion phase of, you know, all right, we're going to get this mastered. And it was like, hey, guys, I lost half your songs. And so out of nowhere, we had to retrack everything. And I'm actually happy about that because I'll send you the full album. The Last Stand, The Void, some of the best songs that came out were actually those re-records.
Really?
So, yeah. So the studio tech was really cool about it. And he's like, look, you know, my backup didn't, you know, go through. He's like, so, like, I'm just going to comp all this time, and you guys are going to be able to redo it. So he was really workable on actually re-recording it, and we nailed it better than we did the first time. So it's kind of a godsend.
Nice, man. Well, congratulations on that. That was a really terrible situation, but you guys pulled through, man. That's awesome. All right, so I want to go back to the writing. You said that you sat down in your dungeon and just wrote riffs. Is there something specific that makes you actually want to write, or do you just sit down and start riffing?
There's two different ways I've developed my writing styles. You know, sometimes at night I will just be hearing something in my brain, and I literally have to pick up a guitar or any instrument and start to figure it out. And some of my best music's that way. But there's a lot of tracks on this album that they actually had a point. One of the ones I sent you called Never Dead is about a friend of mine. We were playing a show, and, you know, I was good friends with this guitarist of this other band. And I was talking to his older brother, and his older brother had left the show, and he died shortly after. There was, like, kind of an emergency on the roadway, and he went to help someone, and a distracted driver hit him and killed him.
Oh, wow.
You know, and, yeah, so Never Dead's actually about the experience of him. Because after that, you know, I just had this, like, really empty feeling, because it was like, I literally was just talking to this guy. And I was just like, man, dude, you should have spent 10 more seconds of time. So, you know, there are other things in my life that, in order to cope with them, I've had to go towards music. And so that's just kind of an example, you know. It's one of two ways. Either, like, I start hearing something in the head and I work on it, or I have a particular feeling or mode and train of thought I'm in, and then I'll just go down and start, you know, trying to just figure a way to express it, and then it comes out in the music. So it's kind of a various process.
So when you're writing these songs and everything, are you the main songwriter? Do you write the lyrics and the guitars and put it together, or is it a band effort?
So this first album, I did pretty much a good chunk of all the writing on it. I did a good chunk of the lyrics as well. And what I did is, you know, I can do a little bit of backup vocals, but I'm not, you know, a singer. So, you know, when you think about the arithmetic of doing something, if you're not specialized in it, you know, it's real hard to go to someone and say, hey, you're going to do this. So what I did is I comprised on a lot of the songs a bunch of lyrics for them, and I had given them to our singer, Jeremy. I was like, see what you can do with this. See how you can make it fit. And I didn't tell him how I wanted it to go. And I did it on purpose, because I wanted to see how his mind would place, you know, which verse would go where, And Never Dead in particular, out of the entire album, was one where he completely switched around the lyrics, but I actually like the context and the form of how he did it first.
Okay.
And so we went with that. So I wrote a lot of the lyrics, but, you know, he kind of like finalized as far as mixing them around, going, all right, this is going to go here, this is going to go here. And, you know, as far as for like the guitar works, I pretty much write everything. The bass player, you know, me and him have always, since we jammed for so long, yes, 2009, he just has this uncanny ability to be able to adapt to my playing. I can play anything and the guy will pick it up.
Nice.
Yeah. That's pretty much that.
So when you're sitting down and you're writing your guitar riffs, how do they come about? I've actually made some guitar riffs out of scales that I was learning and just, you know, crazy drop tuning. I went from standard into D and I played an E minor scale and I was like, this sounds really cool. So I made a song out of it, you know? Have you ever done that stuff like that? Is there an example on the album or is it just you write these riffs?
Actually, yeah, there's kind of an example of that on the album. The other song I sent you, The Fury, the intro of that song, it's actually kind of a quick pick. It starts, you know, 12th fret and goes up, I believe, in a minor scale. And what I did is I went up and I got it all the way to G on the neck on the guitar, and I tried doing a little bit of a rollback on there. I was like, nah, you know, I need to re-switch that. So I put the rollback for it and up on the 12th fret, and then I was like, oh, shit, like, you know, this is, pardon my French there. this actually goes pretty well together. Yeah, so I've had some things where, you know, the music theory side of it has played in. I'm not the most, you know, antiquated and educated for music theory, but I've done enough to, you know, sit down and kind of try to learn modes and try to go over scales. And, you know, there have been quite a few times where I'll start playing something in minor and try to change the major, and then that real quick little quirk of a change is like that becomes the center of the song.
Hey, man, that's the way to do it. As long as it makes sense to your brain, right?
Yeah.
All right, so you guys, do you guys classify yourself as metal? I'm not really sure, like, is there subgenres that you guys classify to, or is it metal?
You know, we're classified kind of as thrash metal, and I think that label has been more just associated with us as far as the, you know, third-person groups we deal with. And I've dealt a little bit with other radio stations and, you know, just other music events. A lot of times they're like, well, classify yourself. And usually you either have to give yourself that label, and that's the closest thing I could come to, or they just automatically assume that, you know. And I guess I can say some of that probably comes from some of my music influences. Like, I am a huge Megadeth fan.
Yes.
You know, I love Testament, Overkill, the early Metallica, you know. So that's kind of where my inspiration came from as a kid. So I guess that's part of why also a lot of people classify it, but you can hear some of those influences as far as my timing signatures.
Nice. Yeah, man, I don't like genres very much. I think they're just, you know, an elitist kind of attitude. But
yeah.
But I do, however, believe that there is a metal genre that encompasses everything. My view of metal is not exactly yours, but that is what it is. It's metal. We're all metalheads in this little world of ours. And that's great, man. Metallica, I've recently started listening to all their older stuff. And Megadeth, I've been a fan for years. They are thrash metal. So you take those influences very, very heavily, or do you add different things? Do you like newer music too?
Oh yeah, yeah. I pretty much will listen to any music. I've never been big in the country or certain parts of rap, but I can listen to any music and find some appreciation for it. Like what I say, you know, my influences, you know, my dad, I kind of raised me on, you know, good, you know, palette of music as far as like all the way from, you know, Guns N' Roses to like Megadeth, Peace Cells. I mean, so what influenced me is the guitar stability. Is like you listen to Megadeth and you hear the early stuff with Chris Pullen and his, you know, abnormal jazz shredding. And then later you listen to Marty Friedman, who judged me at a guitar comp, ironically. You know, you hear these, you know, guitar players who have very unique ways of expressing themselves. So I kind of rather than necessarily study the music, I went after the idea of trying to be a unique signature, but I really liked kind of the heavy ability of, you know, their drummers and their communication with just the, almost like the percussion side. So that's where I kind of have always gravitated towards thrash metal. But yeah, I'm on the very same page with you on genres, because, you know, I hate labeling, you know, music, because I've also found that by doing that, there are a lot of close-minded people that, you know, just, well, I don't listen to that type of music. And I'm like, well, then screw you too. That's not cool.
My yeah, thing that I hate more than anything is when people say, how can you listen to that rah, rah, rah nonsense? And, okay, I think metal is a great combination of two things, and that is the melodic side and that is the brutal side. And yep. Metal to me is where you combine both of those and you get something incredibly versatile, incredibly awesome, but also incredibly emotional. Vulgar Display of Power from Pantera is a perfect example. That entire album is just groovy and it's brutal and it's just heavy as hell, and then at the end there is Hollow, and it makes you want to sit there and be somber and want to cry one manly tear, you know. And I mean, they did it well. That is my vision of metal, is when you can combine those two elements. And I don't really listen to that growling nonsense very much. I mean, I can only listen to Cannibal Corpse every once in a while because it's just not my favorite genre. I'm really into the metal. So, I want to punch people when they tell me that.
Well, that, and actually, Vulgar Display of Power is actually a very good example of that. Like, when it comes down to things like Pantera, it's kind of interesting because I've always held Dimebag Darrell in very high regard as a guitar player, and it goes back to a very interesting story. I went to the California Mid-State Fair in Paso Robles one year, and Velvet Revolver was playing.
Nice.
And I went up to stage to Slash's bodyguard and was like, hey, would Slash be willing to sign my guitar? He comes back, and he's like, Slash will only sign one guitar. And there's a little kid in front of me, you know, and, you know, as much as my human side wanted to just knock the little kid out, you know, it's like, ah, damn it, you know, this could be a life-changing event for him. So I was in the front row, you know, Slash didn't sign my guitar. I'm all heartbroken because, you know, I saw him on the Estranged video when I was seven, and that was what made me want to be a guitar player.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
Him walking out of the ocean just shredding. And I took my shirt, and I cut it, and I put, why, you are my hero, and I held my guitar up, and it had Marty Friedman's signature, like all these signatures. And I see the Slash kind of look down like, oh, man, I all bummed. You know, so when you come to people who go on a national level, you know, when you look at their character, Dimebag Darrell was one of the best characters for going out of his way for people.
Yeah.
And in that music, they got that groove and they have that sentimentalness, but you also in that music feel just his genuine, his kind of his soul. I mean, like, I listen to The Sleep off Cowboys from Hell, and how he plays that guitar makes me just want to cry, because you feel that was just full-on him and his, you know, just prime expression.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I dig Dime. He was, when I decided to play guitar, he was the guy I was like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to try to do it as good as I can. And I do have my influences, and, you know, he's one of them, one of the higher ones, but Vinnie Paul's the one that actually got me into music in the first place. The Cemetery Gates video, I was very young, I was sitting there watching it, and I just couldn't believe somebody can do that and make the drums sound good. And I was sold, and Pantera's been my favorite band ever since. And I was young, man. It was, Vinnie Paul's my guy, man. His word is law sometimes, so yeah.
Yeah,
Pantera's,
yeah.
Pantera's the band for me.
Oh, man, yeah, I remember when Dimebag Darrell passed away, like, just at school, you know, I was involved in the music community, and, you know, we had jam spots we would go to, like, at lunchtime. We had certain teachers that would let us do music, and it kept us kind of out of trouble when you think about it. And just that day, the entire place was just quiet, you know, right when it happened. Like, it didn't matter which musician it was, whether it was a rock guitar player, someone who was, you know, an R&B blues or whatever, and, you know, it just totally killed the tone of quite some time in the music deal for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tragedy, man. You shouldn't, that shouldn't be happening. You know, it's terrible. Wow. 20 minutes. So right now, can you tell me, a little bit more about the song Never Dead?
Yeah. Yeah. So, as you know, Never Dead was based about, you know, a friend's brother who passed away after one of our shows, you know, and the concept is originally I was going to call it, you know, Heroes Never Die, because the reason he got killed that night was, you know, he left the show and it's raining, and on the, you know, one of the closest on ramps to where we were at, there's a car pulled on the side of the road with their, you know, their hazards on, and they're having a problem, so he pulls over to help them, and it's on, you know, the US 101, and some distracted driver, you know, they just weren't paying attention, or they were under the influence, and they swiped him and killed him. Well,
wow.
That song also, there's, you know, a lyrical reference to no justice, you know, and all this, and no legacy. Well, unfortunately, you know, the guy left behind, a girlfriend of many years who's, you know, heartbroken, and then on top of that, you know, it destroyed his family. But later on, the actual criminal case of the distracted driver, they actually personally knew the DA of the county that was prosecuting the case, and they dropped the charges against them. You know, instead of there all of a sudden being a manslaughter charge, he just got off scot-free. And that was the biggest frustration about it. You know, you have, and it's kind of common, you run across it today with how we are with technology. Everything's on demand, you know, and we're very impatient, and like we want to all of a sudden look at our phone, or, you know, you have the impulse to what's going on. And the sphere of influence that we have on others is very traumatic and can be, and that's an example of it. So that's kind of where a lot of good lyrical placement for that comes, and the actual writing style. You know, I didn't want to just all of a sudden have that song go into a distortion. I wanted to have a build to it to where if you truly know the story, you can really appreciate it.
Wow. All right, man. This is Never Dead.
Oh!
That was Never Dead. All right, so Randy, during the break, you were talking about your punctuality. You like being punctual. You like being early. If you've done music before, then you understand it is vital that you are at a venue at least 30 minutes before a show starts initially so that you can help promote. I mean, you're there. You mingle with the crowd. You get the crowd interested in what you guys are doing. But there are some people, we always leave them nameless, that don't, they don't do that. They set up late, they, you know, get on stage late, they eat up all of the other time slots. So what is your experience? How is your view on this? Like, do you have any suggestions for people listening that may help them become more punctual and help out the, you know, the bands?
Yeah, actually, the biggest cause of it is everyone wanting to get involved in music wants to be a rock star. And then you got that, you know, whole picture of, you know, doing whatever I want. And when a lot of people, you know, a lot of people think of music, you know, in their teen years and kind of that age range when they're doing a lot of the footwork going in their early 20s. And it, people make it about being the big fish in the little pond, you know, and by propping things up like that, that's kind of what creates the general environment in my experience. So the way I've gotten around that is instead of, you know, playing, you know, one show every week, you know, at a collection of venues, you know, in this area, I try to make my shows more tactical. I have specific bands that, you know, because I've had experience in this whole region, I know which ones to kind of avoid for that. You know, we recently started, I purchased, you know, a PA setup and everything so we could run shows now too. You know, and
awesome.
My first show was an out-of-town band, you know, and my goal was to take care of them because the punctuality side of things is, you know, you don't want to be ever lose your time frame, so why do it to anyone else?
Yeah, that's a thing. One of the things that I've seen in my experience is the promoters kind of run a loose, yeah, you can go on, you know, in 15 minutes kind of thing. Instead of saying, this is your time slot, if you're late, you're getting cut. They don't do that, but if these bands went on to, like, say, Ozfest, there's documentation, there's clocks. If you're late, you're late. You don't get that time back. And I think it needs to be run more professional in the behind the scenes of the show rather than the letting the bands call the shots.
Well, yeah, and that's a whole another issue that I can go on for days as far as I've tried to explore with a lot of different, you know, promoters in our area, and now we have some new venues, like we have the Vienna Robles Amphitheater and Paso Robles, where we're getting a lot more national acts, and that area is the first one kind of in our Central Coast area that really is starting to bring bigger acts and they're more professional on things. But in the past experience I've had, I work with a lot of promoters, and a lot of it, they try to gauge the crowd. You know, whether it's a bar, and they're like, oh man, the crowd's not going to be here till 9:30, so they put it starts at 8 o'clock, you know. Then all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's 9:30 and the first band's going on. And if you're the closer, you're playing until 2:30, 3:30 in the morning, right? Yeah. At the bar closing time.
Yeah.
So, and the funny thing you mentioned about that is, you know, when I went down to L.A., I went through a whole different promoter. And this promoter, it was through the Key Club, right next to the Roxy and the Rainbow and all that. And, you know, we played a show there, and it was pay-to-play down there. It was very cutthroat. And honestly, the promotion company ended up going upside down, but they were very like, here's time, your time slot. You had no flex, and as soon as you rolled your gear, the one good thing about it was their studio techs had you, or their stage techs had you set up within like 2 minutes, all your quarters plugged in, and, you know, I run an effects loop, and I'm kind of a complicated guitar player, so hats off.
Nice, man. That's, I like when that happens, man. I mean, I'm the kind of person that I get there, and I will go and hang out for a little bit. I'll promote the band. But then, no more or no less than an hour before we go on, I start setting up my drums. I'm particular about how I want my drums set up. So I take that time and I make sure that my drums are set up, so when it's time, they can be put on stage and I will have enough to be able to, you know, move a cymbal if it's needed. And, you know, that's right there. That's professionalism. That people do that. That's how they do move the stages so quickly at festivals. And people just don't understand that. Like, it's not your time to set up your drum set on stage. It needs to be set up and moved on stage.
Yep.
And, your last-minute tuning as a guitarist, that can be done. But seriously, trying to change the strings on stage, I've seen that, and it's annoying.
Funny thing you mentioned is last night, the stage we played on, you know, there were two tiers to it. You have the front part and then the back part on a lift. And they already had a studio set up drum set that they were thinking maybe, you know, share. That had been brought in the works. But I told the actual guy who was facilitating it, I was like, hey, you know, can we backline our drum set? And he was really cool about it. He was workable. So what we did is just, and part of the reason is our drummer, he is such a fanatic at playing, and he's so in-depth on his dexterity. One, you take away a certain tom, he has a certain layout for a reason, and two, he plays really hard, so if he's going to put any holster or anything, you know, I'd rather be our band, you know, drum set up than, you know, some poor strangers. So we built up everything, all the hardware that way, and we put it on a big cart they had at the venue. So literally it was like we rolled up the whole drum set and just put it up there, and it was like done in like, you know, 5-10 minutes.
Nice, like, man. Yeah, man. From experience, I hit really hard too, and I can't have somebody else's drum set. I have to have mine, because there are reasons why, like you said, there are reasons why I have a certain tom in a certain place or at a certain angle. If you change that, it's going to screw up everything, and that sucks. That's like trying to make a guitarist switch to left hand in a set. It just doesn't work out, man. Not at all. So, sorry. Can you tell me about the song The Fury?
Okay, so The Fury was, interesting enough, one of the riffs that I always kind of had tinkering in the background. I never knew how I was going to fully facilitate that song. So over, you know, about a year, I slowly come up with the riffs. That was one of the ones I was like, crap, I cannot rush this, because it's a very intricate song on a lot, not only the deliveries of the vocals on it, but actually the just the playing style. And what ended up happening, what made that song really unique is as a band, we took a topic of like actual theory, like, because first, sometimes what we'll do is musically we'll listen to it, you know, and if I don't have necessarily a direct, this is what's going to be called or anything like that, usually we kind of kick around, okay, well, what do you think of when you hear this? Because everyone has a tone of their mind when they write something. You can just feel it, know it. So my band, we kind of got on the topic of The Fury. And so at that time, we're like, okay, you know, The Fury, what are we going to write? So each of us took one of the stanzas on the writing of that, like, right kind of in your Fury state of mind, like when you are just seeing red, you know, like around everything around you, you kind of write that up in here. And so that lyrical content is actually each one of us band members taking a whole different section, and you'll see the different personalities of each person. Some people are more confrontational, Others are more, a little bit more articulate, and it really just all meshed together to make a very well-diverse song.
Wow, that's an interesting way to do things. I like that idea, man. Right now, this is The Fury. That was The Fury. So, Randy, you were talking a little bit during the break about your life being changed this past year and everything like that. You said you got injured and you started thinking. So, can you explain what happened and what led you to that thought process?
So, in 2014, I sustained a pretty bad injury. It's probably, going to be a lifelong one. It's something that makes you reevaluate your life. Like, you're not essentially able to do the same things you used to. And, it was a long process. I'm still going through certain parts of the rehabilitation. And, And what I looked at in that point is I'd always been known as being a good guitar player, you know, around this area, but we were kind of a band. We were almost on like a hiatus. We were kind of not necessarily pushing as strongly forward. And one of the few things I could do was actually sit down and play guitar. And, you know, it probably saved my life because it was my way of expression. And it helped me finish the writing that I didn't have complete. And, you know, I got to work better with my bandmates. There's a better understanding. And then also, like, there's just this writing that we have now is compared to the old stuff. There's a lot more soul to it, a lot more purpose. And it just, a lot of that happened because it really shined. I was like, I looked at my life and said, what are you doing? Like, what makes you happy? And how can you find yourself a good outlet? And that's kind of where the power of music really is, you know, I can say it's probably saved my life just by me being able to do that. Because this album is a byproduct of something insanely horrible, but I took it and I put time into something, and really that's what came of it. So, you know, many things are possible through music. And if anyone's, you know, ever went through a really hard time and struggled, they all have their outlet they need. And music is definitely probably the best one I've ever had.
Same here, man. The question, though, that I keeps going in my head is, do you think this album is actually the soul part of it that you're talking about has come out because of so many things going on in your life that it's just a way to express the pain and you know, feelings that you have at this particular moment?
Well, some of that had always been there, but I think it more came to the surface. You know, as a guitar player, you know, I can sleep thick. I can do a lot of different things, you know, that are dexterity bound. But to really try to make a guitar sing, like, you know, just opening on the lead of How I Play the Fury, that's a good way I kind of look at it. Because I can actually do certain sweep patterns in that same key and just make it, you know, a total wank fest if I wanted. But I was like, you know, I want someone to feel inside how I was when I was writing this. And, you know, some people are more adept at picking up on that than others. But definitely, you know, and I'm not the only one who went through turmoil in my music project by any means. You know, my singer, God bless him, you know, he's went through a lot his whole life upside down in a matter of a month, you know. And then, like, same thing with my drummer, you know. My drummer, yeah, we were jamming it out of nowhere, you know, and it's just like, you know, laid off, you know, no potential for, like, any, like, how are you going to make a living, you know. And
wow.
And so, yeah, all of us have, like, went through a lot of these endeavors. And the one thing that's interesting, if you actually look at the pictures or any of the stuff with our project, we're all very different. Our age range, you know, my singer, you know, he's roughly 19 years.
Wow. You still there, man?
I'm 20.
Oh, sorry.
What was
that? Yeah, there was silence. Oh. I was just double checking.
Okay. You know, but we're all very different at our walks of life, you know.
Yeah.
Our bass player's 30, you know, my singer's right around 40, my drummer's mid-40s, I'm 26. Yeah, you know, so you get this weird collage of different ages. That's kind of what makes this really unique to me.
Nice, man, nice. Well, yeah, man, it's really good to hear that you turned to music instead of other things to be able to cope with what was going on. So was it hard getting started? When you first figured out that you wanted to play music, or were you really, really driven to get these songs done?
Well, so the funny thing about music and me is we had a horrible, like, crazy love affair when I first started. Like I told you, I wanted to be a guitar player since I was 7. Yes, I saw, you know, a video with Slash, and it was like, holy crap, that's so cool. And I used to take, like, a hockey stick and pretend I was playing guitar when I was a kid. Like, that's how much I wanted to do it. But, you know, I grew up really poor, and, you know, my parents, they always did their best to provide, you know. And, you know, near my teenage years, we finally kind of got middle class. I mean, you know, in my younger age, you know, we're barely living paycheck to paycheck, living out of a, you know, a little cooler with ice, you know, on Top Ramen.
Wow.
You know, and so I never was able to get a guitar or anything like that, you know. And when I was 15, just turning 16, actually, on my 16th birthday, you know, I hit high school years. I'm going through testosterone, being a little bit, you know, obnoxious. And my dad gives me a Epiphone guitar. And this is the one that has Dino from Fear Factory, Signature, Marty Friedman, you know, all my guitar heroes that I've went out and kind of tried to hunt them down and have them sign it. He gave me a start, and it probably saved my whole high school years. Like, granted, I didn't do the best in school. You know, I was like a 3.0 GPA, whatever. I just winged it. But I would play for like 8 hours a day when I first started, so my fingers would bleed. I would super glue them back, you know, and then like occasionally sleep through a class. And I hit it so hard in the first 2 years, I was already where a lot of people are when they are like 5 years into playing, you know, where they're relatively confident. I mean, I don't have the most music theory, but the dexterity and ability was there.
Okay.
So the music, I hit it so hard up front, it was just like, you know, well, when I finally was, I had like 10 years of anticipating one day I'll be a guitar player. And then I finally got the chance to just like, you know, bloody fingertips and all, hell or high water, you know, I'm doing music.
That's amazing, man. I kind of did the same thing. Right out of the gate, it was practice every single day, as long as I could, as much as I could. Any new information that I had, I'd apply it. I didn't care what it was, I'd try. And, you know, that's it. That's the hunger that you have. And sometimes it's really hard to feel it. The thing is, about the hunger is, you know, there's a love affair going on. Sometimes you hate it, sometimes you love it, sometimes you just can't deal with it at that point, and it's really difficult to deal with.
It's a labor of love. That's the way I put it. It's a labor of love.
Yeah.
Sometimes you love it, and sometimes it'll love you, and you don't want to love it back.
Oh, damn. I'm serious, man. I don't know about you, but there was actually a point in time where I was in a band, and it almost killed me. It was one of the worst experiences of my life, and when it came to a close, everything I had built, everything I had worked for, just kind of disappeared. And there are times where I'm still trying to dig myself out of that depression, and this was in 2010, and I'm still trying to figure myself out. I'm still trying to advance and everything, but sometimes, man, that it's really hard to sit there and try to figure out where you're going. So it's really good that you had the wherewithal to be able to do that, man. I'm my hat's off to you, man.
Well, and you know what's funny is, you know, on air I'm not necessarily going to talk about it, but like actually right around 2009, 2010, I was going through a lot of hardships too that, you know, I can't really specify, but just more of the emotional type.
Yeah.
And it's something to where I totally feel you, man. That's kind of like, I have a lot of musicians there that I know, and they're great musicians, whether they're singers, drummers. And the one curse of a musician is you are always going to have that one thing that there's a partial either emptiness or just a consistent hunger. And everyone, you know, is a little bit dysfunctional. I mean, there's nobody normal in the world, but musicians, we kind of a lot of times get the curse of music's kind of what is a redeeming quality that saves us if we choose to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gotten so bad that my wife actually told me, she'll tell me, stop being a bitch, go play the drums.
My wife did the same thing. That's actually part of why I'm happy I married her, because, you know,
yep,
that time frame I'm talking about when we started up again, you know, she looked at me and it was just like, and, you know, I'm not going to censor. She's like, why the fuck aren't you doing more practices? Why aren't you taking this seriously? And I'm like, oh, it's everyone's, you know, schedule and all of that. But she's like, dude, you either do something or you don't, you know, and just quit, being, you know, pinchy on it and just go forward and just do it. And, like, kick me in gear, and it really, really made a difference.
Yeah, man, that's, it's really good to have that kind of woman behind you. I mean, pushes you. My wife, I don't know about yours, but my wife will call me on my shit. If I'm writing music and she thinks that it could be better or I'm slacking, she'll actually call me on it and she'll tell me that it needs to be changed, it needs to be rethought and everything like that. It's, you know, I love that woman.
Yeah, yeah, and I've actually had that a few times, not necessarily to that degree, but definitely where that's been a displayed topic, and you kind of got to take a step back and really bite your tongue on it and be like, well, you know, they're the third person view on it. I mean, the music in your head, I mean, there's an interesting thing. I kind of, when I was younger, without taking music theory classes, I actually started writing a book. And what I did is I would go over the keys of music and I would play something in it and I would try to classify the scales, whether it's Aeolian or like harmonic minor, you know, and I would kind of figure out where my ear was. So I learned like just enough to realize, okay, every scale there's essentially like a one note difference in it that alters the whole thing. you know, and I kind of lost my train of thought here, but that was kind of one of the things that helped me in my writing process is doing, like, I try to, like, I look up to, like, Marty Friedman from Megadeth a lot. He uses, like, he bends notes into tuning, so he gets that weird exotic sound, and that's something that I tried to use that theory to be able to do, and I got a long way to go, you know, it's only going to get better, but... everyone, music theory-wise, they hear things differently, you know, and their mind thinks differently. And we have a basis of what we structure. Like, if you sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little, and you don't say star, everyone knows star is coming, you know, but they're just like, what the hell? But then there's the perceived part of how things are expressed, and that's kind of the part I like about being a musician. You can be the trick in the sleeve where you go up there and just blow people's minds.
Yeah, man. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. Right now, can you tell me about the song Pulse Driver?
Actually, yeah. So, interesting enough, the original premise on that was I wanted to write a song about almost being, like, a little bit devious, you know, or just kind of, like, the feeling you get after you do something insanely bad. Like, you know, my thought is we all do have a little bit of that in us, you know, and it can be outweighed by the good or not, but everyone has done something that has either been malicious or they, you know, where you get really just high strung, your adrenaline's going, and you just have that feeling of, I shouldn't have done that. And you're all like, the aftermath is you just kind of jittery in your own right or something kind of along those lines. You know, I took a concept that everyone had to have done, you know, in their life. And that's what I wrote the riff about.
Nice.
And it's weird because the song starts out like a very groovy Black Sabbath song, you know, and then just when it gets into the meat and potatoes of it, just the riff, it's just got this patch to it. And yeah, I didn't really write much of the lyrics to that. That was Jeremy Heller, the singer. I brought the concept and I said, you know, hey, let's call it, you know, Pulse Driver, because, you know, you get your blood pumping and stuff when those things happen. But so that was kind of how it was written. And just one by one, the song as it pieced together just kind of became a real, real catchy tune. That's probably the one that I would say is more radio friendly of our songs.
Awesome, man. Well, this is Pulse Driver.
Not the Pulse Driver!
That was Pulse Driver. So, Randy, I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I really, really want people to know how to get a hold of Militant Civilian. So, how can people get a hold of you and hear your awesome music?
Okay, so pretty much how we have everything set right now, it's all synchronized to Reverb Nation. You can either look us up on Facebook. We have a media player there, and everything's being streamed. We have the Reverb Nation account that actually has that, has everything streaming as well. And we're also for sale at Bandcamp. Nice. You can contact us through those versions of the sites, or I actually have business cards I hand out for like the legitimate business side of things at militantcivilian@gmail.com. And that handles more of the official
All
side.
All right,
like,
that was Randy
like that.
With Militant
awesome,
Civilian.
Man.
All right. Last
so
update I got
much.
From Randy.
I appreciate your time. I appreciate
Actually,
you
I'm sorry.
On
last
the show.
Update
had a
I saw from Randy on Facebook.
And if I am
was that he was writing
Coast
some
area,
solo
you have
stuff.
A show,
so
bet your ass I will be.
That is awesome.
Center, right?
I'd really like to see what he does on his
own.
Right,
and
hopefully that comes
it.
Out
All right,
soon,
brother. Thank you very much.
If
you, have
you
a good
are
day.
In the Central Coast of California, and you are able to see Militant Civilian, please stop by, show them some love. Let them know that I sent you, because as much as I want to, I live about 2.5 hours away, so I'm not really able to get to all of the shows that I've been invited to over that way. I will live vicariously through you, my amazing listeners. You can tell me all about the show on Facebook at facebook.com/thelocalmusicrevolution, on Twitter at @TLMRpodcast, on Instagram at @thelocalmusicrevolution, and of course on WordPress, thelocalmusicrevolution.wordpress.com. See what I did there? Kind of a segue. I'm working on it, guys. I'm working on it. As you know, String Joy is a sponsor of mine. Great, great people to work with. So with that being said, go to stringjoy.com. Check out what they have. If you are a guitarist, you know what I'm talking about. Strings, one of the key pieces of your instrument. Sometimes they don't help out the way they should, you know. So stringjoy.com will actually customize a set for you. You can go through the process. You can make a customized set of strings strictly for you to get your sound the way you want. All of the information is on stringjoy.com. Once you have worked with them and picked the set of strings you want, all you have to do is enter the promo code LOCAL, that's LOCAL, and you will get a discount for being a great, great listener of the Local Music Revolution. Lastly, as you know, I'm always looking for bands and artists to feature on the show. So if you know of a band, an artist, or even a musical company that you feel should be on the show, let me know. Go to thelocalmusicrevolution.wordpress.com. In the right-hand corner, there is a tab that says Interview Sign Up. All you have to do is give me some basic information. We'll get the information started. And we will do the interview and have you on the Local Music Revolution. Next week's episode is a very special episode. As you heard, I've talked about String Joy for a decent amount of time this year, weekly, telling you how amazing they are because they are a sponsor of mine, but also because I really love the way they do the company's model and how they work with the artists. So next week, we have Scott, the owner, operator of String Joy, here on the Local Music Revolution, talking about how amazing String Joy is and what they can do for their artists. It's going to be a big week. So, I am done. This has been a great episode. Thank you guys for listening. As always, this is the Local Music Revolution. I am Ogre. You are awesome. Take care and be good, everyone.
This is the local music revolution.